Hi, this is Andrew.
And this is Amy, and in this episode, AADL talks to Fritz Freiheit.
Sherlania recently spoke with local author Fritz Freiheit about his latest novel, Dispensing Justice, a young adult superhero science fiction coming-of-age story. Fritz discusses the process of getting his work published, the illustrations by artist Matt Howarth, his habits and practices as a writer, and some of his plans for future novels.
Well, hello, Fritz.
Hey, Sherlania.
So I've invited you here today to talk about your new novel, Dispensing Justice. But I also, the reason I wanted to talk to you is because there are a few things that are really fascinating about your process and what you've gone through. So why don't you talk a little bit about your novel so that folks who are listening can know what we're talking about? And then after that, I'd like to ask you a few questions about your journey.
All right. Well, Dispensing Justice is a young adult superhero science fiction novel, and it's the second one I wrote, but it's the first one I've published. And the process of publishing it was something that I started down the path of traditional publishing and decided that, well, I'm not getting a lot of response, and given a lot of things on the web talking about how easy it is to self-publish, I ended up deciding to self-publish. Although I think the catalyst to that was when borders went belly up last summer. That was sort of like, oh, I'd love to have my novel on the shelves. You know, it's, you know, be able to walk into a bookstore and say, hey, there it is. I've made it. And then, you know, a third of the bookstores in the U.S. went away. And I went, well, maybe this isn't going to happen. So maybe I have to get behind it and push. And that's how I ended up just going down the path of self-publishing. But back to what Dispensing Justice as a novel is, it's the story of Michael, who is 14 years old and witnesses the death of his father, and by being killed by cyborg supervillains, and his father's a superhero, so Michael takes up his father's supersuit and seeks to dispense some justice, or maybe it's revenge. You'll have to read the book to find out which. And as an inception, I had never conceived of writing a superhero novel, predominantly because I don't think of superhero novels typically being science fiction, and I'm almost strictly speaking a science fiction author, although my first short story I wrote was fantasy, but it did get turned into science fiction. And then I came up with the setting for Dispensing Justice, which is a supernova in 1947. So this turns into an alternate history story. And the wave of cosmic rays that hit Earth cause mutation and would have actually wiped out all life on Earth, except for the intervention of a galactic civilization, conveniently called the Galactics. This intervention also included some nanotech to sort of rewrite the damaged DNA of life on Earth, and in the process created some superhumans. And so Michael's a second-generation superhuman, and that was also part of the story because I didn't want to write a superhero story that just started from the starting inception point, which is a way a lot of superhero stories start. I thought the idea of having the second generation as being the focus of the story, which also made it a YA, was more interesting to me.
I thought it was really interesting the way that you just described your novel, because in my mind, like, I'm like, how would I describe Fritz's novel? And I'm like, it's totally a superhero coming of age story. Would you object to that, or would you say, read it again? You did not understand.
No, it is. I think it is a coming of age story, but it wasn't something that I had set out to do, and it was something that I only came to realize as people started to point that out, that it was a coming of age story.
I know that you read a lot of science fiction and you know a lot about science fiction, but your novel is very accessible to people who are like, now there was this show called Star Trek, and I think it's different than Star Wars. And there's this whole set, you know, like, how did you make your novel accessible to people who aren't into the genre? And is that something that you were setting out to do?
Again, that wasn't a direct or a deliberate thing, because the first novel I wrote is actually set 120,000 years in the future and involves transhumans and is, you know, a very different setting than this. This is set in 1984 in an alternate history, like I say, where superheroes have been caused. But because it's set in 1984, and I'm a big fan of the 80s, and so that was another reason I actually said. I sat down and said, okay, I want to set this in the 80s. How do I do that? You know, how do I make it in the 80s yet? Make it science fiction and make it a story where it's – well, let's put it this way. The setting is 1984, as I mentioned, and the technology in the story is – really today's technology. And so technology has accelerated, science and technology accelerated faster in the Dispensing Justice, or the Nova Genesis world is what it's called, in the Nova Genesis world than in ours. And this is primarily due to, again, superheroes or superhumans who have super genius. And there are more superhumans in this world that do sort of normal everyday things and aren't out fighting crime. And so Michael and his father are unusual in that sense, but are not unusual in the sense that they have capabilities that are being used in the general populace to a larger degree than in ours.
You have a lot of touches in here where you are able to make this world feel very familiar, and hearing how you're talking about the 80s, and maybe, you know, I was a kid in the 80s, so it's like, oh, yes, the Eurythmics. I understand that cultural reference. But, you know, you've got the neighbor bringing over a casserole, and, you know, that seems very contemporary and very normal. But at the same time, you happen to mention, like, and she has on no mitts because her superhuman characteristics allow her to do that. Tell me about your first novel. Like, you've mentioned this. You know, one of my questions to you was going to be whether this was your first novel, and you've already answered that because you talked about this other one. What happened with that one?
Well, Tactics of Transience is the name of the title of that, and it's, I describe it as Die Hard on a Zeppelin in space. Somebody pointed out it's a caper story, and so that's gone bad. The main character and her assistant, her companion, are traveling through null space on, in essence, a giant Zeppelin. It's a mile long. It's very large. And there's a reason that it's a Zeppelin as versus just a simple spaceship. And I don't want to go into that because that actually goes into way too much detailed background. But the Zeppelin, the ship, is taken over by mercenaries. And she is trapped while still trying to achieve her goal of stealing something. And so the story started with the idea, how do I take a character who is essentially, he's not in power armor. How does he deal with a bunch of mercenaries that are in power armor? And that's where the Tactics of Transience comes in. He's a follower of the something called Transience, like this jujitsu idea applied to tactics. So he fights his way across the Zeppelin to basically deliver something that will disable the attacking mercenaries. And that took, I started that in 1994, and the setting was based on a lot of the role-playing stuff I had done, role-playing Dungeons & Dragons style world that I had created, then that which would go back to 1977 or even earlier. But it was changed to be, rather than a fantasy setting, to become a science fiction setting. Then the main character is sort of, again, she's based on a role-playing character that a friend of mine did, and as well as the other characters, or a lot of the other characters are. And she is sort of kind of this Modesty Blaise character who is kind of like an elven-ish. So it's sort of this weird mixture of fantasy-esque settings, but because it's science fiction, she's actually a human, but been genetically engineered kind of thing. I finished it in 2005, so it took about 10 years to write, 10 or 11 years to write.
So is this something that we'll ever see? Now, you know, it's a little bit different now that you're a self-publishing author. You can decide what it is.
Yes, I will be publishing it, and it's the first book in a trilogy. But it's in its third draft. It really needs to be rewritten. And much of what I've learned since then will, you know, go back and polish it with that.
So tell me, what did you learn when you decided to go the self-publishing route?
I had a general idea. I thought, okay, I could do this for $2,000 or $3,000. And that turned out to be pretty much true. I think I came in under $3,000. But it also, I had some misconceptions about it in the sense that I had thought that I needed to go through to actually do a print version of it. I thought I needed to go through a publishing company to do that. So there's a bunch of ones like Ex Libris or BookLocker that you send them your manuscript and they format it and create it and turn it into a print version. Well, it turns out you don't need to do that. You can actually go print for almost no money at all. You do need to spend some money on things like artwork. If you're not an artist, you need to spend some money on artwork. And if you're not a designer, you need to have somebody do the graphic design for your book. You can do the layout. It's not hard, particularly difficult to do. You just need to know the details of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And then the other thing you need to do is make sure you've got your book edited. And both sort of copy edited and sort of looked at from the perspective of somebody else's sanity check. Does it make sense as a story? Those sorts of things. Writer groups are great for that. But you can self-publish your book for not a lot of money, assuming you don't spend significant quantity of money on artist or other kinds of things, which is where I spent about a third of my money went to an artist, about a third went to copy editing service, and about a third of it went to purchasing ISBN numbers and various other kinds of little background stuff. But you can probably, assuming you're not doing anything special, and I'll note that in terms of Dispensing Justice, it has interior illustrations, both from a chapter heading perspective as well as six illustrations that illustrate the story. And I don't think most people do that for their books, at least for fiction. And so if you're not doing that, that would actually dramatically cut down on the complication and cost of your book.
So tell me about the illustrations on your book. I see the cover art, and I know that you decided, you know, you had an idea of what it is that you wanted. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, that was actually another really cool reason to do self-publishing is I decided, partly because this is it's a comic book story, if I can downgrade it to that point. So I went and I thought it would be really cool if I could get Matt Howarth, who is a comic book writer and illustrator artist that I encountered way back in the pages of Heavy Metal around 1980, and have been a big fan of his since then. And I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to go the traditional publishing route, you don't get to pick who your artist is. You don't get to pick who does the cover design. You don't get to do the interior. There's a lot of things you don't get to do as a traditional publishing. There's a lot of advantages. Somebody's going to come along and push your book for you. So I went and I thought, okay, well, I'll look up Matt's email and contact him and see if he takes commissions. And as it turns out, he did. And so he said, sure, I'll do that. And we negotiated on terms of how many illustrations and cost. And he asked me to send him a copy of the novel. I did. He read it. He read the whole thing. And he did the illustrations based on having actually read it, which I thought was really cool.
So Fritz, tell me, when did you start writing? What made you decide to be a writer?
As I mentioned, this goes back, I did role-playing. I started role-playing in high school with Dungeons & Dragons. In fact, about the year that Dungeons & Dragons came out, 1975, so that goes way back. I was probably, sophomore in high school. And so I discovered people were talking about role playing, and I went, wow, that sounds like a really cool thing to do. So I tracked some people down, ended up doing role playing, and became an avid role player all the way through college. Post-college got a little bit scarce. I think writing became a substitute for role-playing. So when I stopped having regular groups that I role-played with, I started to think more in terms of, okay, I want to get these stories out, because role-playing can be all about telling a story. And so I think that itch of trying to tell a story, I needed to do that. And so I started writing. I tried to write a novel in 1984, actually, was the first year I started to actually write a novel. That didn't go anywhere. It was a couple of pages. And then a decade passed. In the 90s, I ended up starting. I wrote a short story. Then I puttered around, and I came up with the idea for Tactics of Transience, and I started writing that. And by 2004, I had written maybe 28,000 words, which is around a quarter of a novel, not getting anywhere. And then I poked around and tried to figure out, how can I make myself write? You know, another decade passed of trying to figure out what it was that made me put words on a page. And when I figured that out, then I took off. I finished Tactics of Transience in about a year. It was okay. You know, I handed it to a friend of mine who was really impressed that I actually had gotten it done. A friend of mine actually is a writer, Chris Hocking. He's been published. Anyways, he liked it well enough, but he also gave me a lot of feedback. Like, you used the word smile 20 times in 3 pages. Okay, didn't notice that. So part of the process of writing is sort of becoming self-aware of what you're putting on the page.
So you just said that it took you a while to figure out what it was that made you, you know, sit down and write, what it is that made you put the words to the page. What is that?
What worked for me is that I started keeping a spreadsheet of the number of words I had written on a story on a daily basis. So I could see, you know, I got 125 words written today, or I got 500 words written today. And it was the process of actually seeing the growth on a spreadsheet that made me come back to it on a daily basis and get it done.
You also mentioned earlier the role of writer's group, the role of critique. What would you, I mean, you've been a part of groups before. What would you say about that? I've interviewed other people who've said, like, you must belong to writer's group. You need those other people who are doing the thing that you do, and to provide that critical feedback, and people who understand the process, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What is it that you have to say about that topic?
Well, I think a writer's group are a wonderful resource for getting those critiques, having somebody read. But there are other purposes, particularly, for instance, the writers group. I work with the Ann Arbor Area Writers Group, which meets weekly. And one of the things about that, of course, is you can use that as a tool to write. Every week you come in with your 8 pages, you get 8 new pages in. This is a way to get – and if you do that, you can get a novel in a year. So it can become a tool for helping you write. Like I say, I found a different mechanism for that. So that really wasn't my motivation, but I think other people use it that way. But also having somebody else come in and, you know, read this and go, you know, here's what I think is good, here's what I think doesn't work. The feedback becomes – positive feedback is beneficial in the sense of, yeah, I'm headed in the right direction, and negative feedback is also beneficial because it tells you what you need to look at. You know, and you may not agree with the specific thing that's being critiqued, you know, in the sense that they say X about whatever it is that you're writing, but you don't agree with X. But you should go back and look at whatever thing they're talking about, because something about that didn't work for them. You need to go and evaluate, is this something I need to deal with? But it's a way to identify potential problem areas that are going to not be obvious to you as a reader or as a writer. And one of the other ways to do that, of course, is you write the thing, you set it aside for a year, and you come back and it's all fresh because it's been a year since you looked at it. But that doesn't really work very well if you're trying to get things done.
So you've made preview chapters of your book available online. Tell me about that. Like, what was your decision-making process when you decided, like, hey, I'm going to put this stuff out there?
DispensingJustice.com will lead you to the NovaGenesisWorld.com, which is the website I've set up for this novel and its sequels. I think I have approximately 10% of the book available as chapters. Having preview chapters is a good way to get people potentially hooked on it. And Smashwords, which is another place that I published it, actually has a preview mechanism as well. And you can tell it how many, what percentage to give as a preview, make it available. I think I set the Smashwords preview to 15%. And so that was part of my thing, was to approximately do the same amount as on Smashwords. And also gave me something to blog about.
So I know that you have a you have conceived this current work, Dispensing Justice, as a part of a series.
The first book in the Nova Genesis World series, and it's given from the main character. It's first person, and the main character is Michael. And the sequel to this is The Red Rook, and which I've written, and it's in beta right now. And it's also first person, but the main character is Penny, who is one of Michael's friends. And so I'm conceiving that I'm going to write at least 5 books in the Nova Genesis series, each one set from a different character's viewpoint based on the about 4 or 5 characters in the initial story. I think they're going to be somewhat different in their realization. The Penny story is an even bigger story in the sense that it's a Michael's story is very personal. He's out to capture or kill the killers of his father. Penny's story turns out to be a rescue of a friend of hers, and in the process, there's a city-threatening event that she becomes embroiled with. Also, Michael's involved as well. And then the third book is, the title is Have Psionics Will Travel, and is from the viewpoint of Kim, who's also another member of Michael and Penny's circle of friends. And this one's going to be more of a space opera. And I'm not sure about the fourth and fifth ones. I mean, I know who they are involving, but I don't know what the stories are yet.
So my next question for you was going to be like, what's next for you? But it sounds like you have, you know, several novels planned out for yourself.
Yeah, the Kim story, Have Psionics Will Travel, I'm planning on writing in the second half of this year. And the current novel I'm working on is called The Neo-Polymath and is a different universe than either Tactics of Transience or the Nova Genesis world. And is, I don't know, kind of like a 1950s version of the future, although it's set in the year 2000. It's another alternate history of a superhero, not a superhero, a kind of pulp hero. If anyone knows Doc Savage, probably a few people will recognize that name. It's based around the idea of Doc Savage-esque character. But again, it's kind of second generation. So the main character, Doc Morrow, his father is really the parallel to Doc Savage. But I'm having fun with that one too.
So how much time a day do you spend writing? That's a lot of writing, like more than one novel, 1 year, you got to revise it. You have to come up with your plot. That's a lot of work to be done. And you work a regular day job. You have a family. Like, where are you squeezing this in?
Oh yeah. Lunchtime, after dinner. The actual putting the words on the page, which requires focus, I spend, when I'm actually writing, 2 to 3 hours a day on that, probably. And if I'm hot, I can get my target usually is 1,000 words a day. If I'm hot, I can do that in an hour. If things are struggling, then it's going to take 3 hours.
And where's sleep in this picture?
Well, luckily, to write 80,000, it only takes me like 80 days to write that. So I can I can cut back on my sleep for a while, and I do. So I end up maybe doing 7.5 hours or 7 hours of sleep.
What is it that that you were like, man, why didn't she ask me this? This is the one thing that I had my answer prepared for this. She failed to ask.
No, I can't think of anything offhand other than, you know, I don't know, the occasional rant on writing that I do on my web blog. And my personal website is fritzfreiheit.com, and that's FritzFreiheit.com. And that's where I have a wiki and a blog, and I spend way too much time putting stuff up like that. DispensingJustice.com will lead you to the NovaGenesisWorld.com, which is the website I've set up for this novel and its sequels. But that's about it.
To learn more about Fritz Freiheit, visit fritzfreiheit.com.
Music for this episode was Walla Walla by Drop Trio, which you can find on the AADL catalog by going to aadl.org/magnitude. AADL Talks to Fritz Freiheit is a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.